bringing your awareness to the breath at the tone of the bell. I want to spend some time following up on Lynette's introduction that emotions are clusters of sensations. And that's really quite important for us to see, not only conceptually, but also in terms of how we practice. So you remember from the first day that the breath conditions the body. So if emotions are clusters of sensations, that also means that the breath doesn't necessarily condition the emotions, but as we're conditioning the sensations, we're also helping regulate our emotional responses. Okay. Now, that doesn't mean that we use the breath as an emotional bypass, as I did with my surgery, and more about that later. But what it does mean is that lets us know that emotions have some components to it that we've added to the sensations that make it probably a much more powerful impact on our lives and how we live than if we just thought of them as sensations. Physical sensations. So let me just talk about that a bit. So when we label an emotion as fear, as joy, as anxiety, as guilt, as you name them, okay? Then what we're doing is we're actually adding one more thing to the bare sense of what we're experiencing, which are pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And as we add that cognitive component, it has a touch more power over the way we respond. Now that's important. I just want you to think about that a bit. As we add that cognitive component, we label them as cognitive, we add a touch more power to them, and they connect with us in a slightly more powerful way, if you will, than if we just saw them as clusters of sensations. So Lynette and I both come from warm countries. Lynette's much more warm than mine, but I come from the northern southern states, if you will. And so we had snow, but not a lot. So we both got here at different times, but we both got here and sort of tried to engage in winter. And the first thing you do as a Canadian is you either learn to skate or ski. I tried both, fell both times, a lot. So, but the other thing is that when I would go skiing, and I was, so for those who are not around here, there are some fairly good ski hills around here, but certainly not the Rockies. But there's a place called Mount Tremblant, which is really, for an amateur, quite extreme. So I would go up, and I would go up with other people, and all of a sudden I'd find myself on a slope that had moguls. Those are large bumps that if you are not very careful, you get airborne very quickly. And I would be standing up there, and what would be happening is my breath would get short. I'd get a bit of tunnel vision. I would find myself sweating a bit, and my heart rate would increase. Now, I would call that terror, you know? Now, one of the other people, and it happened to be a group, one of the other people had skied a lot, And that person, when I said that to them, would say, yeah, it's great, isn't it? I've got the same thing. I'm focused, and that we call it not tunnel vision, but focused. My breath would be short, heart rate's going, yada, yada, yada. And boy, isn't that exhilarating. No. So what happens is that we have the same physical response, but based on background, based on confidence and competence, based on a whole number of factors, we begin to connect with that differently. And what's really important is as soon as I become terrified, that I lose ability to see options. I mean, the simplest thing to do is to take off my skis and walk down the hill. It's a longer way, but safer. But typically in those circumstances, I think many people would say, I don't have a real choice here. I'm up here. I've got to come down. And then I can't think of another way to come down aside from the other person who would not have had that same add-on, but would see it as exhilarating, would be able to make different choices. Well, this one's a bit too tough for me. Let me go down a bit lower. All of that. I didn't have that. Okay. So this is really, really important when we begin to think about how do we connect with our world from an emotional sense. If we're really trying to do something to calm my emotional state. Because once my emotional state is at a certain level, I don't have choices in front of me. So what do we do? How do we do that? Well, typically, we tell ourselves not to have them. Of course, I would say to myself up there, don't be scared. And of course, that would really help. We tend to try to look at the positive. So we try to deny that emotion is there. We sometimes just freeze and can't do anything. We do all kinds of stuff. None of it terribly helpful. And you recognize that example, because we put this cognitive, sort of cognitive label on it, that example then permeates for much of our life. So the idea is not just breathe, although breathing, to tell you the truth, by the time I'm there, breathing is not going to do any good. But paying attention to the body as you're beginning to notice it going up that ski lift and allowing yourself to connect with it in a way that lets you calm yourself down on an ongoing basis might work, but by the time I'm up there, it's just go down terrified, walk down in shame. The other person, of course, has all the options because they're competent, qualified, have done it before. And again, remember, the same physiological response, but because of the way it's labeled, the way I'm labeling it, a whole bunch of different outcomes. So what we're trying to do, ultimately, is to increase the outcomes. The idea about mindfulness is that we begin to see the process that we're engaging in a way that we can have control over how we respond to what's going on. I couldn't have known until I got up there, probably I should have, couldn't have known until I got up there that, whoa, this is way over my level. But I could have begun to think about ways that I could manage this that were not at two extremes. So just take that, just think about that just a bit. So part about mindfulness and the reason why we start in the body is that much of how we begin to connect with life in an effective way is related to what we're noticing our bodies doing as we're moving through it. So it was important to me to recognize that buildup as I was sitting there, as I was going up the ski lift. Frankly, even as I was at the bottom of the ski lift and looking up, saying, I'll set this one out. But we tend to ignore that because we feel like we should be able to. We tend to push ourselves into situations that are very, very difficult because we think like we should be able to. And so mindfulness is not about not trying that. Mindfulness is about having access to the options as you're moving through it so you can make choices on the way, just as if you're going on a journey and need to know as you're going on the journey, is this where I should go next? Journeys, you remember, are different from paths. Paths, you have a map. Journeys, you create by your steps. So mindfulness is a journey because mindfulness is the way of looking at your life that allows you to say, what do I need to do next on an ongoing basis? What do I need to do next? And our emotional life, properly configured, gives us a great deal of information about that. So as we were going towards the mountain, and actually this is not very far from the truth, as we were going toward the mountain, I could feel myself getting tense because I was looking up at it. But I tried to ignore that. Now that doesn't mean I have to yield to it, it just means I have to notice it. I have to notice that I'm getting tense. And that tense is going to be interpreted as anxiety. Now, at that lower level, like most of us, I'm going to say, you're going to be okay. It's going to be all right. And I listen to the way I say that. It doesn't sound very cool, does it? So, and I'm going to be doing that because as I'm doing that, I'm trying desperately to think my way out of this. Remember what Lynette said? Whoever responded well to the term be calm or calm down. Another small story, when I had that last surgery, I was in intensive care for a while. It just needed observation. I wasn't ill. So I had all my faculties and I heard some physician screaming at his patient, relax. I kind of wanted to get up and go to work, but anyway. Their job, not mine. So we tend to think that thinking is what's going to get us out of this. And it takes a lot of practice to trust the body's telling us what the body needs to tell us. Because as I'm getting tense, my body is stiffening up. Because that's what happens when I get tense. So my anxiety is then feeding on itself because the stiffness of my body falls into my feeding the anxiety, which makes my body stiffer, which means I get up there, I'm almost certain not to do well. Now, I got down it. It was anywhere near pretty, and it was really terrifying. I fell a few times, but I didn't get killed. Here I am. So the idea, then, is when we're talking about our emotional life, we're really talking about it so that we can connect to it when it's informative. Remember, emotions, including all the emotions we don't like, are telling us things about what we need to do. It's telling us things about what's happening. It's telling us things about what's going on in our environment. It's telling us about how we're engaging and whether it's, in a very general sense, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And when we let them build to a point where we're not connecting with what we need to do appropriately, then what happens is we do things, and we recover from things, but this is really, really important. When I'm doing something that has me at the extreme, I can't learn from my response. So when I'm up on that mountain trying to get down, I actually did some of it okay, but I was so tense that my body didn't record it. And so when I go back up to do something like that, my body can't remember it. So when I don't want to have that emotional experience, and therefore it builds up until I've got to hear it screaming at me, okay? What I'm also doing is I'm not letting my muscle memory collect the data. Because the only way our bodies learn is repetitive practice and letting the body connect with it in a gradual, gentle way so that it can repeat it again. Now, I actually did that when I learned to skate. So I was never as good as any as a person who was born here, but I could, you know, get around and use a hockey stick to keep myself up. But so I learned to do that because, first of all, the ice was flat. And I recognize you can get hurt, but there's only so far down you can go, and then you slide. And so, and mostly my approaches to it were successful and more or less fine. So it's that idea that I can actually have the ability to deal with it in a way that was exhilarating initially and eventually, because I had the ability to let my body learn because I wasn't scared. I felt like I was feeling excited. I had a different experience of the physiological materials because I let myself deal with it at the level that cognitively I was capable. Now, this is really important because if there's one thing you want to recognize, it's not about changing what you're doing, it's about changing how you engage in what you're doing, about allowing yourself to hear what your level is so you step into it with a sense that this is manageable for me. We allow the emotion, we don't put it away, and then as it's increasing, which is going to be a series of physical sensations becoming more and more aroused, as it's increasing, we allow ourselves to see, is this enough? And then we give ourselves permission to say, yes, it is. Yes, it is. Now, that goes against a lot of media and, frankly, cultural hype, which is that put yourself through it. But we never learn to be a long-distance runner by running 26 kilometers. What we do is we run until just at the point where we know we're not going to do any more, but there's still some left, and then we stop. It's called interval training. We push, we pay attention, and we stop so that when we stop, we regenerate. When I go to the edge, I recover. And where I recover to is just to the edge. I don't actually regenerate and therefore create more capacity. But we don't do that with emotions, even though they are physical sensations. What we do with emotions is when we have an emotional response that we're not comfortable with, we beat ourselves up. So we lose the opportunity to learn from that. Just as, for instance, again, what happened with the surgery?
Okay.
with me was that the reason I didn't speak up is I was deeply ashamed. I felt like a coward. Cultural, not very bright, but once I feel that feeling of shame, then everything around me terrifies me. I don't want anybody to know. Shame is a very powerful emotion because we think we're going to be kicked out. We think we're not going to be accepted. Now, I'm in a hospital. I feel ashamed about something normal. How irrational can that be? But I did it. We all do it. It's human. So, there are two ways I could have dealt with that. And that would tell you whether or not I've done it better, is that I can look at that afterwards and say, that wasn't my finest moment. And it wasn't. Or I can be ashamed of being ashamed and beat myself up for doing that. Okay? Now, we live in a society where we think that beating ourselves up is how we progress. So we often lose the ability to connect with shame, to connect with an emotional response, to connect with anything as a learning moment, as a teaching moment. We often lose that ability because we feel compelled not to experience it. We feel compelled not to acknowledge it. And so what you're learning that if we just begin to see what it is, clusters of sensations that are really telling you how aroused you're getting, how tense you're getting, how your body's responding to it. And those emotions are simply labels we put on it that has more cognitive power than it should. Then we can really begin to look at it as what it is. Is your body saying, that's enough? Is the language of our body saying to us, no, probably this is not your best moment. I wouldn't do that if I were you. But also recognizing once the body gets there, there's no arguing with it. And so it's the issue, remembering the breath conditions the body, it's being able to connect with it in a way that is informative. But we've been told so many times not to feel something. Don't be frightened. Again, how's that ever worked? Okay? That we've almost lost the capacity to use that emotional state as good information about how we should act. If I'm frightened, then it tells me there's something that I find threatening, and I allow myself to acknowledge that. If I feel embarrassed, it tells me there's something happening that probably I'm not comfortable with, and I should acknowledge that. It doesn't mean that I don't have to tell the nurse I'm really scared. It just means that I have to acknowledge that I'm uncomfortable with it. If I feel myself getting tense and I want to relax, I may have to acknowledge that this is not a relaxing moment. And accepting that not being relaxed is quite okay. Being frightened is quite okay. Not wanting to share something is quite okay. But when I begin to see these with this really complex process, instead of making it simple, then what I do is I question my question about my question. Should I have? Did I? If we begin to see it for what it is, which is our bodies talking to us in just another language, then we begin to recognize that our body probably has a fairly good sense of what the situation is. And at least we should run the experiment. At least we should test it out. If I hold on to it until such time as it's screaming at me, there's no talking to it. So this is about accepting that we move in an environment that at times is challenging. Beginning to listen to the messages that our body is telling us, with it has an emotional component to it, or emotional label to it, that this is going to be difficult for us. Recognizing that I create the ability to tolerate those difficult times, not that pushing myself to the limit, but pushing myself to a place where I've got more stuff left. That if I want to learn to ski, I don't start after the second year on top of a mobile mountain. What I do is I go, I lived in Toronto at the time, and so there actually was, even though the Don Valley, if you've gone to Toronto, you know the Don Valley Parkway, there was a ski hill on it. I practiced on that. So, believe it or not. So, recognizing that I'm going to pick something that's going to be quite small, so that I can begin to get the confidence and I can feel it, not anxiety, but a thrill, and I can always keep at that edge where I can feel the issue still being thrilling, and then I develop confidence. It means accepting what the emotions are saying, because they really are the body's message, and that really I can't change the way my body's going to respond to it, and I don't want to, because my body is telling me it's level of comfort, whatever's happening. So I take it away from this thing that I'm judging, which is really difficult, and bring it into something that I'm accepting because it's information. If I'm walking down a dark street, even in Ottawa, and I'm a little nervous, I'll accept that as normal. Things do happen. I don't look like I'm 26 anymore. And I'm more vulnerable than I've been before because I'm older. So I'm going to be worried about that. If by some chance I climb a ladder, and I didn't climb much of one, I make absolutely certain that it's very stable. Because should I trip, my balance isn't as good as it was. And I can feel my body saying, "You're nervous, Frank, listen." Be scared, it's good. So it's really beginning to connect with the importance of knowing, absolutely knowing, that what you're hearing is something you don't want to ignore. Making sure you hear it soon enough and you will listen soon enough so it's not something that's whispering, that's chatting with you, as opposed to screaming at you. Knowing that once it screams at you, the choices are highly restricted. And the most difficult of these emotions, it's almost always shame. Nobody likes to talk about shame because it's shameful, but it's almost always shame. We all have it. And so recognizing that that's simply nothing more than being frightened, in my case, in that emergency room, of not being welcomed there, of being somebody that they would not think should be there. Because I was scared. Now, I assume I'm not the only one that has an irrational thought like that. We all do. So what you're recognizing, and this is really important, there's a commonness here. If I can talk to this, people are not going nodding off, I'm obviously connecting with where you are too. So this is common humanity. Hard for us all to accept. these things are unpleasant. We'd wish they didn't happen. And it's hard to see they're informative because they seem to be so intrusive. But they tell us things. The job I go to and feel depressed, doesn't say there's anything wrong with me. It says I'm probably not in the right place. Now, I may have to stay there for a period of time, but I don't want to argue with myself and say I shouldn't feel this way because I do, and it's not going to change. The relationship I have, which I say, wow, this is really great, but I'm really scared, means it's important. Not that there's something wrong. The sketchy neighborhood I walk through that causes me to be anxious doesn't mean that I'm a coward. It means that probably I shouldn't be here. Or if I'm going to do it, then I have to recognize I am very, very brave. Not feeling fear has nothing to do with bravery. It has to do with stupidity. Not feeling fear, if I'm in a dangerous place, has to do with not being really bright, because it's scary, and it should be. I select people that have to do very dangerous things. People who say, I'm not really scared, I'm going to go over the top. I say, I don't want you. I want somebody who's scared, and isn't going to do anything rash. So being scared is not only normal, safe. It has to be acknowledged. So mindfulness is about sensing into that whole process, the physical sensations, the emotional label we put on it, and recognizing is part of the human condition. And rather than tightening around it, we begin to soften around it. We actually soften the body around where the place where that tightness or that emotional tightness is. And we allow ourselves to soothe ourselves. We say, it's all right to have this. It's important to feel this. And then we make it relational. Anyone who's experiencing this would feel the same way. Anyone who's about to go through that second surgery would be scared. The process of connecting with what is, allowing it to be, and understanding its intent. Exercise we're going to work with for a few moments. It's part of the Mindful Self-Compassion program, Kristen Neff and Chris Gerner. It's called, of all things, Soften, Soothe, and Allow. So, just closing your eyes, letting your breath settle in. started bringing to mind something that may have happened in your life that can be mildly distressing. Being aware of the common tendency to go to the worst possible thing, and seeing if it's possible to come back is just mildly distressing. And seeing if it's possible, as you're bringing that incident or feeling or interaction, that you can localize it in your body somewhere. Tightness, perhaps, or heaviness. Something that allows you to connect to the sensations associated with that difficult experience. Just taking a moment to seeing if it's possible to let the breath soften around that experience. Noticing the tendency sometimes to tighten around it, but letting the breath soften around it. And we can begin to soothe whatever you're experiencing by calming words. It's okay. It's okay to have this. But also, we as mammals all have the inherent ability to be soothed by warming touch. There may be some possibility, or you may want to just allow yourself to warm your hands up and just maybe connect with that place that you can feel the distress, and just allowing that to happen. Or maybe just placing it over your heart and just feeling that as a touching, soothing way of being with yourself. Soften, soothe. And continuing that for a few moments, just allowing the feeling of being soothed begin to resonate in your body. And maybe forming the words at the same time. Anyone who is experiencing this would be distressed. Common humanity. I'm not alone with this. Anyone who is experiencing this would be distressed. Just settling in. Just settling into the breathing, softening, soothing, and allowing it to be. Noticing perhaps the change in how you may perceive the incident, event, or whatever. Just noticing ready, opening your eyes and taking a moment just to allow yourself to connect with that experience that you're allowing yourself to record it in your mental hard drive, your body's hard drive. Just before we end, I want to clarify something. I made a faux pas calling going through something that's dangerous and not being frightened stupid. First of all, I shouldn't have used that term. But what came to mind is a person I once was interviewing for something, it doesn't really matter what, who indicated that they had no fear and would do things that other people wouldn't do. And what I'm saying about that is that it's not wise. Because fear is a piece of information that guides you well. You don't want anybody who's doing anything dangerous not to be frightened. What you want them to be is to be have that fear in the back of their mind to guide them, not to be overwhelmed by it. And that's what we train for. People who do that sort of thing, they're highly trained to be frightened and let the fear be a guide about how far they go and what they do, not to stop them. So that's what we're looking at. We're looking at this situation of being able to be where we can be, connect with when we're still able to be who we want to be, having the presence of mind to know when it's time to say, that's enough. And that's really different from how often we're taught to push it to the limit. But what we know is if I push it to the limit, I recover, but I don't regenerate. If I go to the edge, and if I go to a point where I can see the edge, and then stop, I've still got capacity, and I build capacity. Any training program involves that. Thank you.